We have been waiting for this for years. We have known as parents that the platform's design is addictive and is harming our kids. And one common thing that we all have is that we were good parents.
You know those two big landmark social media verdicts we've been talking about? Well, so many of you have been asking me, but where were the parents? I mean, those two verdicts basically blamed social media platforms for causing harm to young people, especially teenagers.
In a landmark social media trial, Meta and YouTube were found liable for creating products that led to addictive behavior. Just yesterday, in a separate case, a New Mexico jury found Meta violated state child exploitation laws.
And even though juries found Meta and YouTube liable, people still think that really parents should be more accountable. Some reactions to the verdicts: don't blame social media. Bad parenting. Parents not being responsible. Where were the parents? I mean, that is a natural question for all of us to have. Throughout the years, I've spoken with a lot of parents who've lost kids to the darker side of social media. They're victims of bullying, sextortion, overdoses, and suicide. And what I keep hearing over and over is that they thought they were doing everything right. They trusted parental controls. They trusted tools the companies touted as safety measures for teen accounts.
Big tech, they know exactly what they're doing. Quick hits.
Hey there. The future of entertainment is here.
We're being domesticated to be maximally harvestable for the attention-based business model.
One of those parents is Kristen Bride, whose 16-year-old son Carson committed suicide after being relentlessly bullied on Snapchat's YOLO app. Here's the devastating truth every parent really needs to hear. These landmark trials revealed that these companies knew of the harm their platforms did to kids, and they did it anyway. It's an unfair fight. These companies have so much more money, more power, more resources, and a ruthless financial incentive. So the verdicts are in. What now? What does this mean for us parents? Will the companies actually change? What work still needs to be done to keep kids safe? To figure all of this out, I talked with Kristen Bride, now an activist whose story is being told in a new documentary. I also talked with Tristan Harris, a former Google ethicist and co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology, and Reuters reporter Diana Novak-Jones, who covered the trials. Let's get into it. Kristen Bride, thank you so much for being here. I'm a mom. I want to just start with, can you just tell me about Carson? Can we just start there?
Sure. Carson is my youngest son, and he's 2.5 years younger than his older brother. He was our bright light. He had a great sense of humor. He was incredibly creative. He loved doing jump scares on me, and I told him that he was going to give me a heart attack one of these days.
So he'd like jump out from around a corner or something.
Yes.
That was his thing. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. He did like scary movies. He got into acting and was incredible at it. And so there's definitely an empty hole in our family, and we all feel it.
A new documentary called Your Attention, Please tells Kristen's story.
Carson was tormented by a group of his peers.
I am testifying here today to bring a face to the harms occurring every day from the unchecked power of the social media industry.
What did that feel like when that verdict came in?
It felt amazing. We have been waiting for this for years. We have known as parents that the platform's design is addictive and is harming our kids. And one common thing that we all have is that we were good parents. I waited until Carson was 16 to give him his first phone. It was a very old iPhone. These were parents that were on top of it. Yet it is completely an unfair fight when these companies have billions of dollars to spend on psychologists to create products that are addictive, because that's the business model and that's how they make money.
Well, I put a lot of news and information out about this trial, the big tobacco moments and parallels, the verdict. And I got inundated with, where were the parents? Where's the parent responsibility? You must hear that all the time. So take me through that.
We just simply did not know. We have done so much work as survivor parents, letting parents know what happened to our kids and to beware. Like in my case specifically, we waited until 10th grade to give cursing Snapchat, only because he begged for it. Because that was the way all the kids were connecting and he felt left out. And what I didn't know is that Snapchat had allowed anonymous apps onto their platform. And anonymous apps, if you look at the history of those products, they always lead to cyberbullying, especially when targeting kids. And usually a suicide, and then they shut down and a new one comes to play. So I think it's just so easy. We see this. I've been advocating with the AI chatbot moms as well, those survivor parents, and they thought their kids were using it for homework help. And yet they didn't know that this is transitioning into an emotional relationship. And yet again, that is the business model to keep kids online longer.
She joined forces with parents in a grassroots organization called Parents Rise, fighting for stronger laws to protect kids online. She also testified in front of Congress, demanding lawmakers get involved so parents are not alone in this battle to save their kids.
Our numbers continue to grow exponentially, with teen deaths from dangerous online challenges, sextortion, fentanyl-laced drugs, and eating disorders. Let us be clear. These are not coincidences, accidents, or unforeseen consequences. They are the direct result of products designed to hook and monetize America's children. It should not take grieving parents filing lawsuits to hold this industry accountable for their dangerous and addictive product designs. Federal legislation like the Kids Online Safety Act, COSA, which requires social media companies to have a duty of care when designing their products for America's children, is long overdue. We need lawmakers to step up.
What can a parent, from your perspective, having gone through the absolute unthinkable, having advocated, having gone to Washington, having worked with so many other parent survivors, what do you want parents to know?
I really want parents to wait and delay as long as possible. The families that I have known that have done this, it allows the kids to learn to develop a real friendship in person and not rely on likes and followers, these artificial numbers that social media gives these kids to compare themselves. And then later, it can be used as a tool to connect, but they have that foundation of real interests, not scrolling through TikTok, but real outside interests and activities and real friends. And having that foundation and that base, I think, lets them be so much less susceptible to being sucked into the drama and to the social media, because they see it for what it is. It's not what a real relationship is. So, and there's wait until 8th, and there's these movements to get all of the parents in a school to agree. We're not giving phones, because that's the problem.
That is the
right?
problem. They're the only kid who doesn't have it, and they feel bullied about that.
You know, if we can get all parents to agree, and with these trials and what we know now, how can you give your kid a phone at such a young age when you know all this is happening? And it is impossible to monitor what is going on 24/7. You'd have to quit your job and look at a mirrored screen. And, you know, a lot of the parental controls that have come out because of legislation coming, and it's just PR and they're not effective, or a lawsuit. You know, they're doing a lot of marketing right now about parental controls and how safe it is, and put it back on the parent. But it's like a bad water source. How many filters can a parent put on it? You've got to eventually go back to the source, and the source is rotten to the core because of the business model.
If you were sitting in a room with Mark Zuckerberg, what would you say to him?
I would say, how do you sleep at night? You have kids. Your wife is a pediatrician. I don't understand how you can disconnect from your business model with the impact you're having on real kids and real families everywhere. He's talking about how kids or the average person only has three friends. Well, that is because of him. And he's using that as a reason to create AI chatbots for more people. And that goes against everything we need as a human being. We need human connections. We don't need artificial ones.
What exactly did the social media trials reveal about what Meta knew and when they knew it? Well, here's some of the evidence from those cases. A March 2020 slide presentation from Meta's own research found that 32% of teen girls said that when they felt bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. One Meta researcher wrote, IG is a drug, we're basically pushers. A 2018 internal document said, if we want to win big with teens, we must bring them in as tweens. A former Meta employee testified that Instagram's own surveys showed 13% of British teens and 6% of American teens linked their suicidal thoughts directly to the platform. The person who wrote that raised this directly with Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg. He got no response. Of course, I asked Meta and YouTube to talk with me about all of this. Meta sent a statement and shared this news clip of CJ Mahoney, Meta's chief legal officer, responding to the verdicts on Fox News.
We disagree with these verdicts, respectfully. We think that they're vulnerable on appeal, and we're going to pursue those appeals aggressively. At the same time, we recognize that teen mental health is an important and complex issue, something we spend a lot of time on. We try to make sure that the teens who use our accounts have a good and positive experience. We're going to continue to do that, but we're not the only ones who have responsibility in this area. Parents have responsibility. Schools have responsibility. Trying to pin all of this on one social media company or even the tech industry, I think simplifies the problem in a way that isn't helpful.
I'm not saying that parents are totally off the hook here. Ultimately, it's up to us to figure out what's safe for our kids. It's true, we know them best. And when we know better, we can do better. But what about the companies at the heart of all of this? When they know better, they can do better too, right? That's what I talked about with Tristan Harris, a technology ethicist who sounded the alarm about social media years ago in the documentary The Social Dilemma.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
I mean, I think it was a huge win. And there's not that many wins in this work. As you know, we've had to wait a long time patiently for something like this. And so you have to celebrate when things are moving in this direction. You know, when you see that India and Indonesia, I think one state in India specifically, but Indonesia, adding to the list of Australia, Spain, Denmark, France, are all now doing social media bans for kids under 16 years old. That's the human movement. That's humanity fighting for human values, saying, wait a second, we're not anti-technology, we're anti-inhumane technology, we're anti-bad outcomes that are making us not human. And so because the AI situation is even more daunting, we think it's really important to harvest the wins that are occurring in the world of social media, from these two lawsuits to the many more, by the way, that are going to be behind them. And, you know, we need to keep fighting.
I remember in 2013, 14, as a design ethicist sitting at Google, thinking about this and thinking about how the incentives were all upside down, that you couldn't get companies to do, you know, the right thing here because the incentives were just to maximize attention and engagement. It took me several years to kind of get my head grokked around that. And it always felt like there was going to need to be a major lawsuit, to make it happen. And when you look at the evidence from Discovery, you know, Facebook knew very, very well what this was doing to young people. And they continue to basically ignore it and print money in the meantime because the psychopathic logic of if I don't go after the young people and it causes all these harms, then someone else is going to do that.
I don't get that. You know, how can anyone in good conscience say that, believe it? You know Mark Zuckerberg. How can he say that? How can he actually believe that?
You know, the line that has come up almost every day in the last decade of doing this work is the line from Upton Sinclair, that you cannot get someone to understand something when their salary depends on them not understanding it. Which is to say, you can only have the beliefs you can afford to have, and when your incentives are so strong, you will find a way to contort yourself like an acrobat to make it work, to be able to continue to do a really bad thing. If you have devoted your life to building a technology that you think is connecting the world and making it more open and connected, and you have billions of dollars in your pocket to show for it, and a lot of people use it every day, and a lot of people seem to, quote, get more of what they want by clicking on it, you develop a worldview that's self-reinforcing with that whole belief, a whole paradigm of how you see yourself, your identity. And to question that the entire time, you might have been building a brain rot addiction for profit, loneliness for profit, most anxious and depressed generation in our lifetimes for profit machine, is not really on the menu as something that you can believe and afford to take on.
So if it's all about the profits for these companies, maybe hit them where it hurts to force change. While the verdicts condemn the actions of the social media companies, the fines were not particularly hefty considering how much these companies make. Meta made $235 billion last year. Total damages across both verdicts, $381 million. Meta's appealing both. What Tristan thinks could actually incentivize the companies to fix the problem is a latency tax. Here's how he explains it.
What would change it is what's called injunctive relief. It's the part of the lawsuit where you get to demand changes to the way, you know, a business operates or to how a product is marketed or sold, just like with cigarettes. You know, now it all has the label that cigarettes cause cancer and it can kill you, and it has it on the pack. And as part of the master settlement agreement with Big Tobacco, my understanding is that as part of that, there's $100 million a year that goes to the Truth Campaign to create ongoing cultural immunity to the advertising of Big Tobacco. So just take that in for a second. It's like, okay, if we're even going to benchmark against Big Tobacco, then there should be a minimum $100 million a year going into the global immune system of society to protect from the perverse effects of social media. At a minimum. And that's assuming that social media is only as toxic as Big Tobacco, which I would say social media is probably 10 times more toxic when you, if not 100, not 1,000 times more toxic. So what could that actually look like? What could injunctive relief look like? Well, one idea my co-founder Aza Raskin came up with is something called a latency tax. So instead of taxing them in dollars, which we know is just a cost of doing business, you could actually charge companies for the amount of harm that is assessed that is coming from their products in the form of a very small delay in which their services load. So think of this like, there was a study, you know, Amazon found that for every 100 milliseconds that their website loads slower, they lose 1% of revenue.
So we would do that before they show kids algorithmically, like how would that work exactly?
Yeah, so let's imagine. So first of all, this is a complicated solution. Yeah. So it would take some time. But what I want people to get maybe in thinking about it is, let's say I'm Facebook, and as part of this lawsuit, it comes to the fore that there's going to start to be a latency tax on my service. So basically, things loading from Facebook.com or Instagram.com will load 100 milliseconds slower.
So everybody's randomly, mine, yours, kids, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Until, it's not like a permanent thing. We're not trying to make it bad. We're just saying until you fix the product. So until it no longer causes all of these problems, you're going to be hit with the latency tax. And by the way, we're not taxing the other ones. Like maybe YouTube doesn't have as much damage to youth mental health. Maybe it has some other damages around, you know, late night use and sleeplessness. But we assess that damage too. So you could actually have a scheme where you say, once we democratically make a list of here's all the problems we're trying to solve. So we have late night sleeplessness, we have social pressure, we have body dysmorphia, we have shortening attention spans. And we try to do an assessment of how much has the design choices of each of these products contributing to those harms. And then based on how much you're doing that, you get a bigger or smaller latency tax. And again, you could announce this and say the latency tax is coming 6 months from now. So you have 6 months to clean up your act and change your products. And I guarantee what would start to happen is all the companies would say, oh, you know what? We don't actually have to do auto-playing videos. You could just hit play. And suddenly you don't have the dopamine dysfunction everywhere, brain rot for profit system. And my deepest hope is that this lawsuit, these cases, the validation of everything we said in the social dilemma, have everyone come with a level of skepticism and cynicism about the promises of a new technology
And instead of looking at the possible of a new technology, we look at the probable, looking at the incentives. The incentives are how we were able to predict what would happen with social media. The incentives are how we're going to be able to predict what's going to happen with AI. And so far, I think all of it is validated.
So what comes next in the legal fight? The tech companies will appeal. More lawsuits will get filed, and lawmakers will need to take a long, hard look at Section 230. That's a federal law that provides a really broad litigation liability shield for internet companies. I talked with Reuters reporter Diana Novak-Jones, who covered the trials, about the legal battles that will likely continue for years.
My job here is to really cover litigation over dangerous products, drugs, medical devices. I've written a lot about baby powder. I've written about pesticides and mass lawsuits about that. This is really the first case that I've ever covered involving sort of like an intangible product. You know, you can't buy Facebook off the shelf, and yet it's being sued under the same laws that I, you know, routinely see used against more tangible products. It's really, to me, a reflection of the new world that we're in, that we live so much of our life online, and so much of what we do online has, you know, major influence in our day-to-day lives, like our concrete lives. That's what these cases really are about, and it's really the first time I've ever covered anything like that. So we're learning. I mean, the verdicts really taught us for the first time how people are thinking about these things. You know, if they see Facebook as a product that can cause harm, and, you know, we found out that they did, at least in these two trials.
Well, and then that whole 230 issue comes in here. Can you explain that little wrinkle in all of this for us?
Yeah, so that's a key part of these cases. There's a law, a federal law, we refer to as Section 230, that provides a really broad litigation liability shield for internet companies. And basically what it says is that companies can't be liable for what third-party users post. So you can't sue, you know, Facebook for an offensive post that somebody wrote and shared. It is a very broad shield, and it's generally protected these companies from litigation for years, since the 90s. It's a law that was, you know, put on the books in the 90s in kind of the early days of the internet and as we know it. And now these cases are based on claims that are kind of designed to get around that shield. So in both the New Mexico case and in the Los Angeles case, and obviously there are thousands of additional cases, you know, in the same vein as the Los Angeles case about addiction and mental health harms related to social media. The allegations there are that the companies have designed their products to be addictive or to, you know, keep people online to an extent that it's harmful. And so, you know, the plaintiffs say that, and judges have, you know, agreed to some extent so far, that arguing about the choices that Meta is making when they're designing their platforms doesn't have anything to do with the third-party content that they're, you know, that is really the core of Section 230. So in both in New Mexico and in Los Angeles, the judge has sided with the plaintiffs and, you know, and allowed these cases to go to trial and agreed that design features are a different issue than third-party content. And so that's going to be, you know, a really key feature of any appeal that comes out of these trials is, you know, weighing this question of design. And is that, you know, is the internet protected under Section 230 about the choices that they make in terms of design? Section 230 is really thought of sometimes, you know, as the law that created the internet. And if you can imagine a liability shield, you know, broadly protecting every internet company, that is a huge part of how these companies function. You know, they know that they have this protection, that they can take risks, that they can, you know, make choices about how to build their platforms and grow their audiences, you know, with this shield in place. And so if these cases are really showing that there is a way to pierce that shield and or get around it, however, you know, whatever terms you want to use, that could have major ramifications for the internet writ large and you know, not just Facebook, not just Instagram, not just TikTok. So I think that watching these appeals and watching how juries respond to the coming trials is really going to tell us a lot about what our future will look like with the internet.
Okay, time for some final thoughts about all of this. I remember allowing my own daughter on Instagram and Snapchat around the age of 16 as well. I tested Facebook's, now Meta's, new tools to help curb teen screen addiction back in 2018 along with my daughter and wrote about it for USA Today. I was that mom too, paying attention, watching, managing. Yet I had no idea at the time that Instagram served my high school cross-country star a steady stream of thinspo eating disorder content. What she experienced is exactly what Meta's internal emails said she would, including body dysmorphia. When I saw her get too thin, even though she was a competitive runner and all the fast girls looked like her, I intervened early, taking her to doctors and specialists and watching her like a hawk. Even at the time, though, I had no real clue what was normal teen angst versus a potentially deadly problem brewing. If she had simply been a bit more sullen than normal, I can't even stand to think about how much worse it could have been. Today, my daughter's in law school, and she gave me her okay to share all of this with you. She's 25, just a few years older than Carson would have been. When we know better, we do better. It's time for these tech companies to do better. Go watch Your Attention, Please, then come back here and tell me what you think. We have to keep talking about this.